Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1033. If you're going to be in Tacoma or Seattle or any of the surrounding areas in Washington State, then I'm going to be at the Tacoma Comedy Club December 12th, 13th, 14th. If you go to Tacoma Comedy Club's website or you go to ID10T.com/tour, those would be excellent places to get tickets. Come on out and see the wizard guitar. My guitar that has a wizard painted on it. If you haven't seen a picture of it, I put it on Instagram. It's amazing. I just want to give a special shout out to my friend Bunny Reese, who is Bunny Love Rocks on Instagram, who is an incredible muralist and artist who took on the challenge of making a D&D themed guitar with a dragon and a wizard and knocked it so far out of the park. It is a triumph and I adore it. And I would like to show you my wizard guitar. So please come on out to the Tacoma Comedy Club December 12th, 13th, or 14th. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com, like Chandra, who writes, "Last year I finally published my first book and it turned out to be a kid's holiday book. Every Little Snowflake is a sweet and honest and occasionally funny conversation based on the real life conversations I had with my young son about how we celebrate the holidays a little differently than most of his friends. We talk openly about the real person who was Saint Nicholas, how his story changed to become the magical Santa stories of today. We acknowledge the other winter holidays that people celebrate and emphasize the importance of sharing kindness and joy with everyone over racking up a huge stack of presents, though presents are fun too. Every Little Snowflake is written in a secular voice, but is inclusive. Anyone of any religion or of no religion can enjoy this book. So in short, if you want to tell your kid Santa isn't real, but you don't want to be a dick about it, this is the book for you." Ah, Chandra, you got me. That was really funny. Go to Chandra, ChandraDKMiller.com. ChandraDKMiller.com to find links to the preview and purchase it. You can use the ISBN to find it on Amazon, or if you'd rather not give Jeff Bezos any more money, you can go directly to the printer, blurb.com, under their bookstore. Thank you, Chandra. This episode is Anna Gasteyer, who is one of my favorite humans. Anna and her husband, Charlie, are such delightful human beings. And I don't know, there's just people in the world that you feel like you've known your whole life, or that you feel like I must be related to this person because you just click. And Anna was on the podcast several years ago, maybe 7 years ago, 6-7 years ago. We've been friends ever since. You know, whenever I perform in New York, she and Charlie come out to the shows, and it's, you know, besides just being a massive fan of her work, it's an honor to not only have witnessed so many of her great comedy moments, but also just be able to talk to her about, she's just a fun, easy person to talk to who also happens to be a genius and a comedy genius. She has an amazing Christmas album out called Sugar and Booze. She's touring right now. There are dates at AnnaGasteyerInConcert.com. I know if you're in LA, she's going to be at Largo on December 3rd. I'm sure Lydia and I are going to try to go to that. So just support everything this woman does, because she is the best. Anna Gasteyer, episode number 1033 of the ID10T podcast. Now let's roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
We'll be right back. Test, test.
How's any of this stuff work again?
Check 1, 2.
Are we recording now?
Oh my God. Is that, I made you a double shot Americano.
I love it.
Okay, it's good.
Was it a packet?
No, it's this thing.
Nespresso style?
No, it's not Nespresso. It's called Tassimo.
Sure.
And it's the only coffee my wife was really into. And when we first started dating, I realized pretty quickly, like, oh, if she's going to stay over, I need to get a Tassimo. So I got a Tassimo. And she just, heartbreak of all heartbreaks, Anna, just found out the Tassimo's being discontinued.
Oh.
So.
You mean they're going out of business?
That's it, I guess. I don't know.
Were they bought out?
I don't know what
happened. Procter & Gamble? What happened?
I have no idea. I don't know what's going on with Big Coffee.
Yeah, we'll have to. We can find an alternative.
They're these little, like, pods.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It felt very much like an airport lounge experience. The way that you put it together. And I felt welcome.
Well, you were just in an airport like 12 hours ago.
I was. And as you know, I always go to the lounge.
Always. The lounge.
I am actually really obnoxious that way. Like, I love all of my point perks.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
I'm big on, like, if I can use a credit card for access to something, I'm so in.
Of course you are.
Membership rewards. It makes me... I flew last year, my entire family. So we swapped our apartment with an Italian family, which was super fun. There's like a home swap site that we joined.
What?
I know, it's really fun. And it's a lot of people, Charlie works in advertising. So it's a lot of people in design, entertainment. So the apartments are actually super nice. And it was a commercial director in Italy. And we went and stayed in their house in Bologna. And they came and stayed in our house. Anyway, I used all points and flew all four of us business class with points. And the sweetness of the business class plus points, it just I didn't sleep because I was so excited.
Don't get off the plane. We're going to stay on this as long as possible.
We are up front.
This is where we live
now.
We
are up front.
Yeah, well, the airport lounge is very important because it is the place in the airport where you can poop with a full door.
You're absolutely right.
You can fully close a door.
A little privacy, wash your hands.
That's right.
Exactly what you do.
Yeah, it's just a little living space.
Yeah, a little quiet space.
Yeah, exactly.
I completely agree.
So I totally...
You know the tricks.
I know the tricks. I know the little buffets.
Yep.
Just like little...
Get yourself a little salad.
Oh, a mini quiche. Mm-hmm. I'll have a mini quiche.
Now, on Air France, when you fly business class, we were just business. We weren't first. You go to the lounge beforehand, and they feed you dinner.
What?
They give you the option. So then you get on the plane... Go to bed.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But
I thought you were going to say they spit on you for being American.
They spit on you for being American. They poo-poo you for your poor accent.
Yeah, no food for you. Yeah.
No, but it's great. It's like, again, I never sleep even when I'm in the sleeping situation because I get too excited for the plane and I don't want to miss any of the free stuff.
Sure. So. but one of the free things is an eye shade.
I know. I hoard it. I hoard it. I take it home.
On
KLM, they give you these little like ceramic Dutch... townhouses.
Oh,
they're
come
like
on.
Delft. They're unbearably cute. They're unbearably cute.
The craziest one that we ever flew on was Singapore Airlines.
Oh, I heard that's nuts.
For our honeymoon.
Isn't that like a million hours?
It's, well, to Tokyo, it was like, it's like 12 hours, 13 hours. And so, we've
this will be really, by the way, very relatable content.
This is super relatable content. So in the lounge, you know you're in the lounge.
Well, it depends. Were you flying private?
Well, not this day. Mainly because I don't like the bathrooms in the private terminal.
I know what you mean.
It's not even worth it for a half hour.
Fast forward.
Yeah, so fast forward to...
Relatable content.
To our... You know when you're wiping your ass with a $100 bill and it just looks like you've given
shitting in silk.
Ben Franklin a dirty Sanchez. We flew Singapore Air was our honeymoon, so we got to fly in the first class.
They
Singapore Air basically has these full on like there's no roof over it, but it's pretty much just an enclosed room.
House. It's a house in the sky.
We got two middle sections, which the two middle sections have a like a screen that goes down. So basically, we were just in a queen size bed, Tokyo and back. So it was pretty. It was pretty. Pretty.
Did you sleep?
Yeah, I do. Lydia doesn't.
Did you mile high it?
I did. We did not mile high.
Come on, it's your honeymoon. It's your honeymoon. You're in a private cube. Where else are you gonna do it?
No. We just need. No, we don't need anything right now. Well, they
please knock.
They check on you a
lot. If the cubes are rocking.
So
stupid.
We just...
if the sky cubes are rocking,
what did you do with those complimentary socks? Don't ask. Don't.
Oh, you took it to the socks. I didn't. Damn it.
I'm sorry. I know. We didn't hoard any of that stuff. But it was... I sleep. Lydia doesn't sleep. She just watched the... She'll watch the same animated film over and over again.
Yep.
And I think it was... the Rich Moore one with the Jason Bateman as the fox and Zootopia. She watched Zootopia on a loop because she just tries to fade in and out.
Oh,
and so it was just on a loop.
I've had so many. I love watching movies on planes. It's such a guilty pleasure, and everything is good in the sky. Like you can see the worst movie, and I've come home with some great. Reports, but I also have had a lot of bad luck where I'm starting to land. This actually happened to me. I finally watched Blades of Glory on the plane. I was so excited. Also, that asshole that was just roaring with laughter, so loud.
Because did that movie come out like 15 years ago?
Yeah, and it was on, and I hadn't seen it. And, yeah. You know, I was like, oh, I want to see it. It was a while ago, and I had the thing happen where I landed, and like 2 seconds before we landed, like we landed, and I still had like 2 minutes to go on the movie, and then I had to go home and fucking rent Blades of Glory for the credit. Like, I was so angry at myself, but at the same time.
Wasn't Will in that?
Yeah,
Will. Why don't you just call him and ask him what happened the last 2 minutes?
I should have just called him up and said,
just text me the last 2 minutes.
Hey, what happened? But also, knowing, I mean, if that, my tangential thought here is that I don't know anything about anything that I've done.
Okay.
So, like, for example, I was in Wicked on Broadway for a year and a half. I played that role, and we just went back for the... It's like their 15th anniversary. So they were like invited people to come take over their Instagram and see the show again or whatever. And I hadn't actually seen the show since well before I'd been in it because you're backstage.
Sure.
You're doing the show.
Yeah, of course.
And I literally did not remember the plot. I was like, really? I didn't realize they were both in love with the prince.
Oh my
God. Just like the most basic.
I really understand that other sister now.
No, I literally remembered that she was green and an outcast. That's all I remember. And it's sort of upsetting. It's like I dump the hard drive, you know, like, or the hard drive dumps the info. Well, as soon as I'm done, I'm like, don't need that information
anymore.
No,
of course not, because, you know, we only have so much space in our brain for things like.
I know, but you'd think that the repetitive motion of doing a show, like, I should know the lyrics to Wicked.
Do you remember any of it?
Barely.
I'm just so wicked.
I'm a real wicked witch.
Hey, good night. Hey, you guys.
No, that's it. I don't remember. I didn't remember a bunch of songs. I didn't remember the love song.
You know, it'd be fun just to see you like go up at like Largo or something and just do a night of songs, but as you remember them. So you just have
I really
like,
should
two lines or one thing.
And then I'm so and just play it I've really leaned into the scat.
So wicked, Scooby-Doo,
zippity-zip, gravity.
I think that would be very enjoyable.
It would be an enjoyable evening,
but you
for
couldn't
sure.
possibly remember everything. And also, I feel like your sketch improv background and SNL has trained you to like scoop it out,
pump
forget
it
about it,
pump it and dump it. Right? That's exactly for pumping and dumping. I mean, I can't because, no, it's true. And now they play vintage SNL, and it's scary. Like, for a long time, I wouldn't remember, you know, I don't know, basic. I wouldn't remember other people's sketches. I repeatedly now will see myself in a sketch and have no memory of being in that sketch.
Because it's all short-term memory. You can't commit it to memory because you have to do it all over again the next week. It's not possible.
SNL, also, you have a cloud of cortisol. So it's
yes,
like
that's the other thing.
We talk to the science people.
Yeah.
The cortisol blocks are all in play. So it's just... Yeah, spiritual blackout. For
yeah,
6 years.
It there's just a hole in your memory.
Yeah, that's right.
Where you don't.
I might have murdered someone.
I don't know. Yeah. It's very possible.
There wasn't even alcohol involved. It was just.
It was just
a psychic.
It was a survival tech.
Yes.
It was a survival mechanism.
Yeah, PTSD.
And also because
there's a term for it.
You have to also emotionally protect yourself because you know I'm. I remember the first time you were on the podcast, which was years ago.
I know, and so great. Still to this day, my favorite interview.
What?
I tell people that all the time. That was the beginning of my love for Chris Hardwick.
I really appreciate that because you had said that Will Ferrell had this special bulletproof skill set of if a sketch tanks,
he'd
just be like, yeah, well, really stunk up the joint, yeah. And he just moved on.
Oh, he's delighted. He not only moves on, he leans in. He's delighted by
that
failure.
That is a specific mutant power to have.
I think my son is getting it, which is really making me happy. Because, like, for example, this is a podcast, so you can't see it, but he steals my phone all the time. Shit, I have a notification on here, so it's ruining my bit. But like, his constant. We're on a podcast, but his favorite game is to make the ugliest face alive.
So your home screen, your lock screen, is basically just a very awkward.
It's like a child version of Jerry Lewis. Like it's so upsetting.
It's his full face in frame, but it's like cutting off at the eyes.
But he likes to do as many chins as he can. He does like my daughter's glasses. He drools. It's really upsetting.
I think you and Charlie are doing something right.
Well, he knows to lean in. On the bomb, like, which is I think a really good
leaning
instinct.
In on the bomb is a great way to think about it, because if you can, not just with comedy, but if you can lean into bombs anywhere, any kind of like situational
life
bomb
lesson.
Except for an actual bomb is not a great bomb to lean in, but other types of
depends.
Bombs,
but some people might need some levity,
but it's
I just remember.
You'd be pretty bulletproof.
I know there's a guy, a friend of mine from old groundling, David John. You never know David.
I don't know if I do.
He did a one-man show about his sobriety journey. It was awesome, but he did have this like life lesson. I'm just tangentially telling someone else's story now, but he does tell this life lesson, which was so funny, about like finding himself and letting, you know, looking for the moments when you have those revelations of what it's worth to sweat and what it's not. And he was alone at Pearl Harbor. This isn't funny, but it's so funny. He was alone at Pearl Harbor, like on a Hawaii trip, like a self-searching congratulations trip to himself, during that false alarm that went out on the phones.
Oh my God.
And he was at fucking Pearl Harbor, and they hoarded them all into the auditorium. So for like the 19 minutes that nobody knew if it was a false alarm, whether or not there was like a missile targeted, they were watching the repeat footage of what happened, like at Pearl Harbor.
Oh no!
On a contiguous loop, like it's like it's so dark that it's funny.
Jesus Christ!
Anyway, talk about leaning into the bomb. That's what that made me think of.
Definitely.
And he was like, he had like all of the why do we sweat our careers and why do we worry about this when this is really the moment? And he had all of the profound, and then like the second that it was off, he was like, and back to me.
Exactly.
Back to narcissistic thought.
No, like, but I wonder if like in that moment after that 19th minute, everyone was like, oh my God. I mean, this is kind of funny, right?
I know.
I mean, in a way, it's not funny, but it's funny. It's like it's weird, but it's funny.
So I just noticed the bald eagle.
Oh no, this is an oscillated turkey. This is a specific type of like. It's basically like a.
Is it taxidermy?
It is taxidermy.
That's
amazing. It's a vintage taxidermy.
Oh,
he's a very colorful. If you look up oscillated turkey, I call him a theater turkey.
He has a lot going on
because
he's having a hard time making a choice.
He did not follow the Coco Chanel rule. Take one thing off before you leave the house.
He's got a lot of colors.
I'm gonna have a blue head and a lot of colored feathers.
That's amazing.
And just these little things that look like candy corns growing off my face and beak.
He's got a lot of. Look at an oscillated turkey. Look it up.
Oscillated turkey. They're gorgeous.
Look it up, club.
They're real sexy turkeys.
Yeah, he's a sexy turkey.
He's a very sexy turkey.
I love it.
You know, seeing that about your son is really funny. And then also, you and Charlie brought your daughter to the show that I did in New York.
So fun.
And she was also really super smart and funny. You've done something great.
We're trying. We talk to our kids inappropriately, I think. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of parenting, like I don't have a lot of us and them with my kids.
Yeah, but you also, that's great because it just sort of, it takes the mystique out of it.
Yeah.
And it just, because they're going to see stuff. Like, their phones have access to the sum total of human knowledge. Like, they're going to see.
Unfortunately, yes.
And unfortunately, the internet prioritizes everything bad and negative.
Yeah.
So they're going to see that stuff. So.
Yeah, I would say the main thing we try to do, like, as parents, which is a gross, like, humble brag, but we talk a lot about, in a lot of different ways, just about moral instinct.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with my son, like, Charlie really worries about. You talk about this in your act, and we actually, when I found out I was pregnant a second time, we had to get like the early CVS or whatever it was back then to determine the gender because he was so worried about having a boy. He was genuinely terrified of just assholery and thugger, you know, thuggery. He's not that into sports. Like, he was just worried about, it's funny, like, you make these predictive decisions, like, suddenly you're going to have that kind of boy. Mm-hmm. And somebody did finally say that, remember, we were laying in bed, he was like, maybe he'll like comics. Yeah, maybe he'll like comics. Maybe he'll be like one of those kids that likes comics.
That's, you know? So funny. It's that's very exactly similar to your that is act. Exactly what I'm afraid of is having like a sportsy kid because I will have to. Because I was not into all the stuff my parents were into.
But your dad was an athlete.
My dad, well, he's a bowler. Yeah, we'll call that an athlete. But my parents were both diehard sports fans.
Interesting.
They did not understand video games. They didn't understand sci-fi. They didn't like any of that stuff. Their tastes were very mainstreamy.
Interesting.
And I was not. And yet somehow, as parents, they were cool enough to say, like, you know, oh, they notice in the first few years that I was alive, like, oh, he's really responding to SNL.
Right.
Let's buy him Steve Martin albums. Like, they just recognize
that's
that.
What you do. So my kid is a weird and he's big. He's a giant child. He came in giant, and he remains giant. He wears an Old Navy men's medium, and he's an 11.
but
he's a giant.
But our version of that would be me having to buy soccer cleats for a kid if he was really into that.
So that's the thing. So he's not a jock per se, but Charlie, like you, recognize that sports is a nice shorthand amongst men. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're going to be very binary about this, of course.
Of course.
He, him, them. them is very. He definitely like sort of just started queuing up television with sports on it, so you know, in the most generic way, so that he could sort of participate in the human race a little bit about it, and he plays sports well enough to have social time with his friends who do like sports. He does plenty of video gaming. He's a Rubik's Cube banana.
Fantastic.
So he's got a lot of nerd in him in the best possible way. Magic is the current currency in our home.
Fantastic.
Close-up card tricks.
A little sleight of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be funny if I pulled out a card right now?
I would
and
love
it was
so
a trick
much.
That he started like before you left home.
Actually, it would be even better if it was in the coffee machine.
It's in my coffee. You spit it out.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Oh.
Ace of spades. I
can't believe it.
But yeah, so he definitely has all those things going, but he knows how to play basketball. And Charlie, we've adapted. You know, we buy him basketball shoes and we talk about it was one of those moments, a parenting moment similar. He was at someone's house, and of course, we watched the Olympics. I mean, because.
Sure.
That's satisfying.
Yeah, of course.
Participation in sports. Doesn't count, by the
that's
way.
The best
to any
best.
Sport person.
No. That's about human triumph. These people have...
Great stories.
Yeah, you're basically watching people
that's
that
exactly
had no childhoods.
Right. That's exactly
and
right.
And this is what you do when you don't have a
and
childhood.
And thank God for them, they're winning. So he goes to his friend's house.
It's when you're done with all this stuff, but don't worry about it.
He comes, and talk about cortisol. The cortisol fog. He comes home, and he's like, did you know that there's a magazine about sports?
What?
We're like, he was like, there are cards. Josh gave me whatever the trading card. I took Nathan Chen.
Oh my God.
ice skater Nathan
oh,
Chen.
Oh, he's
American
gotcha,
gold
gotcha,
hopeful.
Gotcha.
I was like, not quite the choice that you probably should have made in the situation.
But great.
But good, yes.
Good
and
for you.
I will get you that sporting magazine.
You know what? It sounds
and it was
like,
Sports Illustrated, by the way.
Oh, so
like,
so
it was like a revelation.
So
to
these
him.
Sports are illustrated. These aren't just textual sports.
There's that moment, you know, we were like, wow, we are terrible parents.
But it sounds like if you're just. Cool and listen to your kids.
Yeah,
and are pretty straight with them about stuff. They're okay.
Yeah, I that was a very meandering reply.
No,
what I really feel that one thing that we do well is to tell them to listen to their moral compass, which is I always describe in your stomach. I mean, I think that you really do. Everybody has a gut, and Charlie's afraid of thuggery, so he's like, you know, especially now he's like middle school. You're like in any situation with thuggy guys, he's like. Any cue, like any little thing in the pit of your stomach, listen to it and use us as the fall guy. I did it with my teenager. It's like, you have a good head on your shoulders. And they do have, I mean, my kids aren't very risk friendly. They're not the kids who want to like take jello shots and jump out of a car.
No.
So, but I have always said, like, just listen to the feeling. You know the answer. Because I look back on all the bullshit that I did. And I always knew when I was wrong. I always knew, like, I should not be going to this person's house while their parents are out of town.
Right.
I should not. Like, it felt largely...
But isn't that what you're supposed to do when you're young, is break bounds? I was not either. Like, I was a kid who... You know, it's funny that I ended up drinking so much in my 20s because in high school, I was very much the kid who was like, oh, I don't need to drink to have a good... And I was kind of a buzzkill. I was just a nerdy buzzkill.
Yeah.
And so I didn't relate well to other kids.
Right, because you don't get invited.
I was not rebellious.
Right.
I didn't like to... I liked rule following.
Yeah, Frances is like that too.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
So
that's
I
good.
Look forward to her alcoholic time.
When she's 22.
Well, but I think that whatever, it's a social tool. I mean, I had the same thing with smoking. Like, I cried every day when I quit smoking because I literally couldn't imagine being out socially without a cigarette.
Yeah.
It was so, which is crazy. Like, I'm a singer, but.
That is really crazy. When did you quit?
When I was 33 at Saturday Night Live.
Oh my God. Oh, during the production of the show?
Mm-hmm.
That's ballsy.
I did it in that weird, like, self-hating, I need to remove myself from some of this social. And I didn't drink for a while at the show too, just because it's so intense there.
Yeah.
In a you know, party crazy way that I was just like, I can't function if I participate.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like that. I imagine the ride on that show is super high highs, super low lows.
Yeah.
Blowing off light. It's just like a bunch of extreme.
Yes.
Emotions,
yes.
up and down.
And when you crash, so eventually, you know, I was 33 years old. I was like, I just gotta like go home and go to bed. I can't maintain.
Yeah, that
you're
that
on so little sleep. The fumes thing, it's real. And that's when I really started to realize, like, oh, I get deeply paranoid when I'm tired. Like, I could start to see people. Because, you know, we stayed up all night on Tuesdays. And
yeah.
Part of that is of my own making because I'm a terrible procrastinator artistically. But, you know, but also the culture. I just didn't want to miss anything. I don't like to miss anything.
Yeah.
So I would stay till 8 every single Wednesday.
Oh, my God. 8 in the morning?
8 in the morning. And so when you're, and then you come back for read through it, you know, noon or 1 or whatever. So, I would see people. I would see like phantoms.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, nothing, no grosser feeling than rolling into the glistening lobby of 30 Rockefeller Plaza with like people in their outfits with their coffees. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like, we wrote a sketch about ladybugs. It was like the worst or whatever it was. Just like kind of furry and foul. And I would eat an entire bag of Jolly Ranchers.
That's a great. Well, that's the fuel that powers you through.
Just buckets of Jolly Ranchers. Like after I quit smoking, because I would smoke a pack of cigarettes, and then when I quit smoking, I would eat a bag of Jolly Ranchers. Like the interns would run out and get it for me.
You know, I will
say
this.
Like a crazy person.
I will say this. And when you get off that elevator, and you walk down the hall where it's just, you know, a photo of every cast, I feel like when you go back. From the beginning of the cast, you eating a bunch of Jolly Ranchers is probably
pretty mellow.
The best thing that people did.
Ooh, yeah, probably. I think that's probably
in those
true.
Hallowed halls.
I bet, though, if you were to look historically, like a lot of women, I think, you know, whatever, Gilda Radner was anorexic. I mean, there was a lot of like famous sort of crazy.
Well, there was
crazy
a lot. There was a lot of. I would imagine addiction and obsession and a lot of, especially in that period of time before people really
cared
were
about
open
it.
Or cared about that
yeah.
stuff. Like they just didn't. I feel bad for them. The you know the Gildas and the Belushis of the world who didn't necessarily have the coping and the right
yeah.
tools to.
I don't know. It's such a chicken and egg, right? Like I think it's so. It's so part of our culture and so part of what, I mean, comedy culture when I say that. I think
right.
that so many people are naturally born towards a high tolerance for risk, a high tolerance, you know, all the things we're talking about.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, like most comedians are a certain way.
Yeah.
And then doing comedy like really just mashes down on those nerves.
Totally.
All those kind of obsessive, you know, like.
Yep.
Insecure, addiction, like any of those things. We probably do comedy because we're a little like cracked and
yeah.
like that's our defense mechanism.
Oh, completely. And a version of it now as I'm like older, because you know, I really have thought about you so much because you're so inspiring to me creatively.
Oh my gosh.
You take so many risks, you embrace the creative process so openly. And I this last year for me was really nothing but risk taking. And I don't know if I'm just getting older, but I mean, I am, it turns out. This is weird.
I feel like we might all be doing that.
it's strange. But anyway, I mean, I don't know if like the wisdom of getting older or just tired or whatever, but I, you know, I gained 20 pounds this year, and I gained 20 pounds kind of unconsciously, and I don't care as much as I used to care in this neurotic way about
right.
not, I mean, I don't feel fat or anything. I'm just like, probably
good.
I'm supposed to
feel,
weigh this
you
much.
You feel comfortable.
Yeah, I do feel comfortable. I did change out my pants, which is a really important part of this story. Cause really the key to life, if you're not like hugely fat and your doctor's not like, you gotta calm down.
Right.
Just buy new pants.
It turns out they'll just, someone will just bring them to
just
your
get
place.
Your better pants,
you don't
better
have
pants.
To go. You don't have to go get them.
Because you know what? Nobody wants to feel tight around the middle. No. So anyway, what I was going to say though is like I was starting to flagellate myself on it. You know, whatever. Like, of course, I don't want to like gain a million pounds. I'm an actor, performer, also healthy, health wise, and whatever. But I don't want to spend any more time wondering if I'm an apple or a pear. Which shape? But I did also write a friggin' album and an entire Audible series, Soup to Nuts, which I have never done before. And there is something in that, like not spending the time and the anxiety of it, which is to say the weight is a metaphor for a total anxious freak out and drain circle.
Yeah.
I set out with this Christmas album that I just did, Sugar and Booze, where I was like, you know, I've done jazz. I do this kind of like silly jazz, happy jazz vocal thing because it's a nice marriage for what I do, which is both the really like serious singing Broadway stuff and then comedy. Happy jazz kind of lets you improvise and be fun. It's very old fashioned and joyful, kind of lives in this character-y place, but it's really vocal at the same time. I don't have to like apologize for being a singer. So I was like, I'm going to try to do four originals on this album. Christmas is naturally covers because
absolutely.
Everybody's doing, everyone wants to hear, you know, Let It Snow. Or worse, they want to hear Jingle Bells.
Or Le Tits Now, as we call it.
What is it?
Well, when you...
Le Tits Now.
Yeah, when you hashtag and it's all together.
You're right, Le Tits Now. I never thought about that.
Le Tits Now.
Darn it, Le Tits Now.
Le Tits Now.
Well, this is good.
Le Tits Now, Le Tits Now, Le Tits Now. So you wrote four original
songs. I wrote three. My producer wrote one, which you already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Nothing Rhymes with Christmas. I helped him, you know, in the studio whenever you're collaborating, but it's his song. And I just sort of set this goal, and I didn't mean to like swing this towards this, but it is very much about taking these risks. And I set this goal that was like, let's just try it. And I did the usual, like, you know, intestinal seizing,
the prejudgment.
Yeah, well,
this
who are you to write
terrible.
A song?
Why am I doing this?
Right. And you were saying the thing of like when you're writing for the sake of you have a focus song. I don't think we were recording when you're talking about writing your comedy songs in Rock of Ages. Like similar thing because I knew that I wanted to write within the holidays, so I just kind of did the artsy, you know, the like hippy dippy of taking the judge. Asking the judge to quietly sit in another room.
Yeah.
And whatever. It's me in my living room with my friend Nicholas, who is a really fun comedy songwriter. He helps me, like, we do lyrics together. He teaches music at my kids' school. And I was like, why don't you just come over, whatever, every day this week, and we'll just see what happens. I have this idea of this song, Sugar and Booze, which is, you know, the best part of the holidays.
The title track of the title, album.
The titular song.
The titular.
Speaking of tits.
The titular item.
And I like the idea of just landing on the best part of the holidays is Sugar and Booze. So we you know, which, because I'm not a religious person, so it's a great time of year to let it rip. And so we did. We just started to play with it. And then I literally was like hearing songs in the shower in that dopey way. And I started to let myself record them into the phone. I wrote, you know, I knew I had the title Blue Black Friday, If I Don't Spend It on You, which I was like, that's a good lyric. I want to. So it's a sad song. It's a ballad about Black Friday. And then this really dumb, like, the Secret Santa song, which literally was like, in my head, call me a banana, but I went down to Havana to buy my Secret Santa a present today. I slipped on a banana, woke up in a cabana.
Oh, I know the song.
Sipping rum and orange Fanta, so I think I'll stay. And so, like, it's so great. So as we're writing, I was like, I wanted to do a duet with Maya Rudolph because we harmonized really well together. It was really, just seemed silly and fun and kind of Cuban flair. And so as we started to work on it, Nicholas literally is like, hold on. So what, you know, you always have that moment, like, what is this about?
It's about...
And he's like, it's about a woman whose Secret Santa is dating her. And she goes down to Cuba to look for the perfect gift for him. He's kind of an asshole. She wants to get him a cigar. She slips on a banana, cracks her head on the sidewalk, and gets woke. Okay, good. We know what this is about. It's relevant. It's a woke anthem.
For Christmas.
You know, so, but as we did it again, I was just like, the one song, Sugar and Booze, I put up on its feet deliberately in concert last Christmas before we recorded it. The other two, I was like, there's no way these are going to get done. And when we were in the recording studio, we left like 2 hours at the end for sort of shits and grins. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have lyrics and I have a tune, but let's see if we can do this. And we did it. And it was the most just insanely organic, exhilarating, SNL style. Like, we have 2 hours left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hemorrhaging money on this thing. I have an incredible piano player. So let's see if we can figure this. Jazz pianist, you know. Yeah. So let's see if we can make it happen. And he did. He was like, and also I just love to, like, he's a professional. So in the Cuban music schema, there's like a Montana and a, you know, there's all these different names to the beats, like hamburger, hamburger, hot dog, hamburger. They have all these different, right? And literally to me, I'm like, it sounds Cuban. You know, yeah. Just like the worst, like that Pantone gray. There's like right. 39 colors. You're like, I'd want a gray wall, you know? But so that's how, it was funny. He took it very seriously. But it ended up being so friggin' fulfilling to take the risk and pay it off. Like, you realize how much people just are doing that around you. They're just trying and nobody else is judging.
Yeah, but it also, what it says is that it should be reaffirming that your creative machine, that it sometimes I find that when I really focus on something and get something done quickly, and I kind of go, I could probably do this most days of the week if I, not most of it's not going to be
good.
Probably good or usable,
yeah.
But if I just focused enough, you know, like your instincts would take over, your years of experience, your natural funny would take over, and you would come up with stuff. You could probably write, you know, 100 songs in a year if you really devoted the energy to it.
It's so fun. I mean, it's so fun to put yourself in a position where, and again, when it's on you and it's your money and you're paying for the studio and you're paying for the musicians, like, you can get lost in the weeds of the sort of enormity of that. Or you can say, just like SNL, when I first started there, it was like, and they supply the wigs. You know, like, there's this feeling of like, there are resources here. We've hired talented people for a reason. And
but it's just starting it, because if you hadn't had that 2 hours to do those songs, you probably would have talked yourself out of it.
I would have.
You know, let me work on it for a while. And it's sort of like, you know, like, I think we think of things as having to be these, they come out of us as these perfectly formed, gift-wrapped
totally
items that are, you know, perfect in every way.
Yeah.
But that's very unrealistic. It's like, well, how would I even, I'm just not going to do it because I don't know how to get to that gift-wrapped moment. It's like,
right.
Well, you start. You
start.
Go down a path. Doors will open as you just have to be confident that the doors will open as you go down.
Yeah. And know that, you know, like everything, there's just a series of steps to solve a problem. And so what's the smallest step you can take first?
Okay. So what do you do though? And I'm asking because I have a personal reason for this. So what do you do?
Is this okay to be talking about this?
This is amazing to be talking about this, because you've seen, because you got to see the app, you got to see what I was working on.
And yeah.
It's very much in a, like, the songs are new on stage, like me doing songs alone in front
so
of people.
Good.
But I've been working on this one song for like 8 months, and there's a part that I can't solve. And so there is that thing of like, oh, you know, like, you can just throw stuff out there. But I am really stuck on something and I cannot get past it. I can't find the solve. So what do you do in those moments when you are just beating your head against the wall over one section?
We had that exact thing in Sugar and Booze because, again, we're making an effort at a nostalgic vibe song with some funny lyrics to it. But I really was hearing, I like a goofy sound. I like a big brassy persona on stage, a lady with a martini glass and a, you know, and I like horns. I like ridiculous instruments. I like glockenspiels. Mm-hmm. I like slide whistles.
Mm-hmm. Good,
but
good,
so
good.
Good start. But so we were trying to find the balance of what's funny about the song and what's a good song. Mm-hmm. Like, what's a standard that you want to hear? And so it wasn't a comedy song overtly. And we had a section that we went back to a million times, and that was the instrumental. This is going to make you laugh, but it was like, should there be a glockenspiel solo?
And you get close to it, you can't tell.
So close. And we heard it a million different ways. And then we laid it down. We lived with it. It was still bothering me. I was like, is it the tempo? Is it the thing? And then it was just like, I got really busy with other stuff. And I went back in. And again, sometimes what Stephen King says, like, the story is in, it's already there. It's like you have to dust off like an archaeologist, you know, to find your site. You just keep dusting off and keep dusting off. And maybe with your song, you have everything but the head. And so you have to just kind of keep going back and experimenting. And we laid in, this is not answering your question, but we laid in like the way that I heard the comedy, the best part of the holidays is, and I heard it, I couldn't figure out what I heard, but kept going, bump, bump, sugar and booze. And I literally figured, I was like, it needs to be the octave. Bump, bump, sugar and booze. There's something much funnier and old-fashioneder and Maxwell Healthier of bump, bump on the thing. And I don't know, something about that did it. And then I could let go of the glockenspiel moment. There is still a glockenspiel moment.
Good. I was worried about that. I was concerned.
Yeah. It opens. Well, it's a
glockenspiel.
They're hard up for work these days.
The glockenspiel.
The glockenspiel community. I wanted to make good on my employment.
This is their Great Depression, which is ironic because it's a very joyful-sounding instrument.
That's so ironic. And there's a number of them, actually, that are having a Great Depression. But I would say the real answer to your question is I would actually start calling in experts. That's what I would do. I would send it to a few people and ask their opinion. You know, I sent my song to Mark Shaiman, who is a big Broadway writer, composer, and wrote on SNL, but he also wrote Hairspray, and he wrote mm-hmm. A million things. He was like, no, structurally you're fine. You could do this with the arrangement. You could do this with the arrangement. But some of which I took, and some of which I didn't. And I think it helps. What's happening? I'm dying.
I think too much sugar and booze.
Wait, I shouldn't have done the octave.
Oh shit! Oh no! No more glockenspiel.
But I would say, yeah, bridges are funny, and I think that you probably have people that know how to write songs in your life. And
I do. Yes.
I would just literally throw
it. I've talked to a couple, just trying to figure out structurally. And then there's also parts where.
But is it structural or is
it's, it? It's structural and it's story wise too, because it's very much a story song. And really what it needs is someone who's much better at guitar than I am, because it's a very epic, It's a very epic tale.
You need to go Jack Black at the end.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's that song that was basically a very mediocre bit that is now working as a song about going to buy tampons for my wife.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it becomes this very, like, epic D&D style, like da na 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 na, and it is very Tenacious D, and spiritually it's very Tenacious D.
Okay, so it could be as simple as changing your strum, like, because what we also did was, so again, when I said sugar and booze, we felt like it was ending too often, so we started changing it. Sugar and booze, like, you can change around with that, you know, so that you're ascending sometimes when you're going into the bridge.
Yep.
Or if, I don't know if that's what you're asking, but
I'm not sure. I think it's also just story-wise too, because there is a story arc to the song. And there's just one part that I haven't solved yet, but which is an interesting exercise, because I've never worked so much on one thing before.
Yeah.
And I actually like that, because I feel like
craftsmanship.
When I do solve it, it's going to be so satisfying, because I've spent so much time just taking it apart.
Yeah.
Trying new things.
And have you tried the thing where you're doing like some stop time and just doing it through a series of one word things?
Yeah. No, I haven't tried that. That's a really interesting thought. That's a really cool idea.
You know, it's sometimes playing with a rhythm. And I mean, I do it all the time, and it's probably exhausting and boring to people to hear it over and over. But we always have a breakdown, because, of course, I dance around a lot. So, you know, that's always satisfying.
Well, comedy songs are specific too, because...
And key changes,
yes, key changes are great, but comedy songs are specific because there is a balance between... The music can't get in the way of the comedy, but then the comedy still has to fit with the music. And so sometimes if you're writing comedy songs, I feel like you get too married to the, well, it's got to be that. I ran into Rachel Bloom at breakfast, and I was asking her about it, because she's masterful at it. And she's like, oh yeah, you can just shorten, like, as you go into the song, you can shorten the verse, you can shorten. It's like, oh yeah, because as a comedy song, it's more in service to the comedy than the music.
Right.
So you don't have to follow a structure and have these gaping holes where people are like, why are we listening to this part again?
Right, and then you're under so much obligation to fill them. I'm always doing that, like that, hence all the slide whistles, you know, where you're
although,
like...
I do have to say, though, I feel like I love your voice, and I think it would be really fun to record a song together that is all glockenspiels. Like, as many ways to
Ladies
celebrate
and
the glockenspiel.
The International Glockenspiel Foundation presents.
Oh my God. They just, every glock player in the world just.
Are you kidding?
Excited.
This is like, again, this is where I would love to have I just want an office. I want an office and people. I want like an overall deal.
Yeah.
Because I want to be able.
Kick around ideas all day.
I do. I just want to sit around. For example, I would like to just sit around for 2 months studying Jack Benny and, you know, Henny Youngman and all the violin comedy in the world. Because I'm a I played violin for 17 years.
Oh my God.
But I don't play anymore, and I'm very bad now. But I'm good enough to be bad. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you're good enough for comedy, too.
Exactly. So I always bust out the fiddle, because who doesn't want a fiddle to be bust out? But I'm not quite, like, I never can actually devote the time. And I think I have probably told you this before, but when I turned 50, of course, my family was like, anything, what would you like? And I was like, I want to go to Country Western Swing Camp and learn how to swing. And they were like, no.
You didn't get to
no,
do
no,
it?
No, they shut me down. They were like, we're not doing that. That's terrible.
Anything you want, except for that.
I was like, you're so mean.
You said anything.
Yeah, so I would love, like, that's the kind of thing that I feel like there's just endless joy. Like, Fred Armisen did the comedy, the Netflix special, just Jokes for Drummers.
Drummers, yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, I've always wanted to form a bluegrass band.
You're speaking my language.
Because bluegrass is
hilarious.
It's hilarious. And also, what's really incredible about it is that it's, when you really break it down, when you imagine, like, the evolution of bluegrass, you know, they didn't have microphones, and it's just like, we have to have just a 3 or 4 instruments that cover tonically all the different, like, really high-end
totally.
Stuff, really low-end stuff,
totally.
Something that drives the beat. And so that's why it's so fun to cover songs bluegrass style, because it breaks everything down to the most rudimentary
yeah.
components, and you really get to see, like, what a song is like structurally when you simplify it. So it's a simplification process.
You're right about that, although it's super hard to play.
It's super hard to play. I mean, like, well, Chris Thiele is obviously masterful at that stuff.
Yeah.
But
even like I Will Always Love You is sort of in the form of bluegrass initially, like her early structure or Dolly's.
Yeah.
And then the idea that somebody, to your point, took that song and made it like the greatest ballad anthem of
yeah.
the last decade.
Yeah, but bluegrass is really fun because it automatically has a vibe that is
fun and joyful.
It's fun and joyful, and hardcore bluegrass players will probably be really annoyed to hear this, but it just makes everything fun and funny to me.
Totally.
So one of these days, maybe you'll play the fiddle, and then
Sort of not to be too meta again and Oprah-y about it, but again, I was trained in a very rigid way, classical violin, and again, I think one of the reasons is, and I started taking lessons, I know you're taking piano lessons, I saw on your Instagram feed. I did it maybe 6 years ago, and then my teacher got pregnant and moved away and whatever.
Kids ruin everything.
Kids ruin everything.
Oh, my lessons.
No, actually, my family was so over it also, because I would be like fiddling the
That involves your kids. They ruin everything.
Well, my husband was a pretty big
He's a giant kid.
But I actually got stuck here during Hurricane Sandy, and I was shooting something. My family was in Brooklyn, where we live, and it was one of those things where I was watching CNN, talking to my husband, and he's like, oh, we're fine, don't even worry about it. And like that moment, I saw my building as like a flood, so we lived on the 6th floor, which was fine, but the building was plunged into darkness for many, many days, and I was stuck here. It was a very weird feeling, because I'm fine being away from my kids if I'm working,
sure.
But idle makes me feel like a terrible person, and it's very physical. Like, I want to be home with them. They were fine. They were just living like, you know, hillbillies, actually. Charlie had made them live in the darkness. He had like a miner's lamp in the apartment. He's like, he gets really
putting
waspy.
Putting rats on a spit.
I swear to God, he would like bring home a block of ice, you know, like every night for the neighbors. He gets real, and there was like our neighbor, like they just got a bunch of extension cords and reached over to the next building. So like, it went through all the different windows.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is the spirit of New York right there.
Slash my waspy pioneer husband. He's
sure.
very like pioneering. He's like, have LL Bean tote, will do.
Wasp pioneer is an amazing sketch.
Yeah, that's him.
That is a great sketch.
But anyway, so I was trapped here, and I went and I ran a violin at my friend Tony's house, and that's when I was like, totally got back into it. And he said, I want to hear Humoresque when I walk through the door, which is the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun that Jack Benny used to do really badly. So I played violin for 9 straight hours for 3 days in a row. I did go to Trader Joe's at night and get a bottle of Shard.
Wasp so then it was pioneer. That's it, Trader Joe's. I got to go see Trader Joe. I got to go get
it's
some.
It's a thrifty value.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Trader Joe got these ramen noodles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so that's when I had my reintroduction to the
Did
violin.
Did you play on the album? Did you play the violin on the album?
I don't play on the album. I do play live. But again, I need more time. I don't, it's always at the bottom of the list, and I need my overall deal so that I can have a little practice room and I can have my fiddling friend come. So this teacher came, and again, it was just like the freedom of fiddling, of just like playing up and down the scale. I just, it's being released of those rules, I would really like.
But the funny thing is that you have to learn the rules so that you can break them.
You do.
Can't. It'd be difficult to just go to that part without understanding structurally music theory, how things are supposed to work.
I know. And I am a terrible music theory student.
It's hard.
It's really hard. And I played violin for 16 years. I was a music major. I was a voice major. And I literally, if you said to me, back to the hard drive, how many sharps in D? And I'm like, I don't know. Because I was a soprano and a first violinist. So I it's terrible. But if you know theory, you know what you're doing. You know how to play the scale.
Yeah. Well, it's I remembered it because I've been learning piano and guitar simultaneously, which is very interesting.
But you played guitar as a kid for
no.
Forgive me. Because I have to say, you're really... You played Clair de Lune the other day? Or like...
No, I played... it was
Ravel
a Chopin piece. It's it's literally the only Chopin piece I could play at my skill level.
I was really impressed.
That motherfucker had like mitts for hands.
Yeah. But it's pretty amazing. How many hours do you practice every day? It's hard to do that as a grown-up.
I try, you know, like when I can, I'll squeeze in an hour. But if not, even if it's 10 minutes, I'll sit down and do something.
Yeah.
On both.
And you learned guitar late?
I learned it. I started learning it in like January. Because I had noodled before, but I'd never played in front of people until February.
Okay, so I took lessons one summer when I was doing SNL, and it was like being in college, and I loved it, and I used it comedically, but I never could play live. I would have other people dub for me because I would hold it. I would just get too nervous to play and sing, and it's really hard.
It's a whole other learning curve. You can play by yourself. And go, oh, I got this. And you get in front of people.
It's
and you're
terrifying.
Like, my hands don't work.
And they're all sweaty.
They don't know what ka-karn.
I know. It's terrible. I'm impressed by that.
Oh, well, once you, like, yeah, but the great thing about comedy is that I can be honest with people and say, like, I'm learning how to do this.
But January, that's a year.
It's almost a year, yeah. But I can fuck up in front of people and it's okay. Like, that's part of the the thing. And so that's really helped. But the music theory on guitar is very hard for me to visualize, but it's very easy on a piano because it's so linear.
Yeah.
But the guitar is such a weird shape instrument. It's like, oh, that's the G, and then two over and two down. Okay, that's the octave.
Oh, my God.
You know, that's another one. And so it but here's what I remembered from the keyboard is, you know, when you go down C, D, E, F, G, A, B, that it goes – I remember it this way. 0, 2, 4, 0, 1, 3, 5.
Oh my God, math.
So zero, C has zero sharps. D has two. E has four. F has zero because it's a flat. And then.
Listen to this guy.
G has one sharp, and then A has three, and B has five. So 0, 2, 4, and then 1, 3, 5 is how I remember. That's how I remembered.
0, 2, 4, 1, 3, 5, starting with.
Starting with C. And F has a B flat, so it doesn't have a sharp in it, but. C has zero sharps, D has two, E has four. Then you skip F, G has one, A has three, B has five. So 0, 2, 4, 1, 3, 5. That's how I remember.
Is that your passcode?
That's my passcode. Oh, shit! Oh, I gotta change everything now.
Sorry, friend.
God.
That's deep.
So that's how I remember that.
You're ahead of us.
No,
synaptically.
But the violin I can't even fathom because there's no frets on it. So you have
to. It's just literal. It's just 1, 2, 3, 4. You just right up and down the scale. It's very intuitive. It's not actually.
Yeah, it is. But you have to hit the exact right spot without the marker of a fret.
That's where you learn when you're six.
Yeah.
That's the part that comes into your head early.
Do either of your kids play instruments?
Yeah, they both play. I made them both play piano. I was very mean about it.
Good.
Because it's like truly like the most mean gavel throwing I've done as a mother. Just like straight up, you may not quit.
Yeah.
I think I told my daughter, you have to play 5 years. Because again, to your point, I really am, people who play piano, number one, it's a very social instrument. I was very lonely playing the violin. I didn't enjoy it. I was like a nerd with an eye patch and glasses and a violin, you know? So And even if you say, like, but you were in chamber group, you know, like, that's not going to cut it. My mother would be like, we sent you to Gettysburg. I went to Gettysburg College Chamber Music Camp. Oh my. Can you imagine a more depressing camp?
And now you can't go to fiddle camp? You should get to go to fiddle camp just because.
I literally was the girl that would do, like, lip-syncing Funky Town, like, in the, like, for, like, just to, like, get friends. I was so not a fit for that place, you know, because on your days off, you would go to Civil War battlefields. Like, it was just such a drag.
Oh, God.
Sassoon-wearing 13-year-old.
You need to go back there. Yeah. Do a bluegrass camp and then do some Civil War.
I gotta rewrite.
Won't you take me to Funky Town? Won't you take me to Funky Town?
That's so true. I actually now would be really interested in the battlefields, but you know, whatever. Times do change.
They do change, but
things become more interesting. That's why we take in vistas. This is one of my things about being a grown up. Nobody likes a vista before the age of 35, and then all of a sudden you're like, look at the vista. Hold on, we've got to pull over. Look at the vista. It's like an adult moment. Who the fuck cares about a vista when you're nine? You're like, that's great. It's the sky.
And then now
like,
so beautiful.
Oh, pull over.
Well, because you know, after 35, like, I don't know how many more of these I'm going to get to see.
Oh my God, I know. And you're like, the marvel.
Yeah.
Just the lighting against the hills.
Yeah.
I know.
Exactly.
So true.
Exactly.
But so things change. But what we were talking about, Gettysburg.
We were talking about music.
Oh, so piano. Yeah, I made them take it because I really regret not knowing the fundamental of it. I want my kids to be able to play Happy Birthday if they had to in a hotel lobby.
Right.
You know,
if they were called upon.
You know, or that guy who's in the airport. They, you know, some of the airport terminals have pianos. I love that.
And then people just get a
big, I know, it makes me cry every time I walk by them. There's just human beings sitting down to play the piano for other
people. It's just like David Helfgott in Shine. He just needed to play.
Oh.
He had to go into that restaurant because they had locked up his piano because everyone was shitty to him.
So true. But yeah, so I did make them play, and I screamed and yelled at them, and now they know how to play.
Well, that's good, though, because I think that discipline is helpful because you're teaching them how to learn the structure of something.
Yeah.
And they can apply that to a lot of different things.
And they do reach a point where they sit down and they play every day, just like you were describing. My daughter, not so much anymore. And then I made her stick with, she signed up for trombone, which initially, there's a teacher at, well, it's a comedy instrument.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's what we do in this family.
Yeah. Your mother likes slide whistles, glockenspiels, and trombones.
Get to it. We've got to get the family act together. So
we're the tromboners.
Yeah, she was going to quit. This is so perfect. She was going to quit because it's the trombone.
Yep.
And then one day in class, I was like, you can't quit. Sorry, you signed up. It was just like at school. So I was like, you got to do it for the year. And then somebody did something stupid and she went, wah, 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 wah. And she got a laugh, house laugh, full house laugh with round.
And then she felt, oh my God,
and then she
I've
was
come
like,
home.
I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
She saw the upside.
Oh, that's like
yeah, but then, so she still plays. She's going to play until the minute she graduates, and then she's going to run for the hills. Because I'm like, you got to do, you know, she taps and plays trombone. I'm like, come on, that's gold. She wants to be a director. She's like, I'm not doing it. I'm quitting.
That is spectacular, though. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, it made me happy, too. But now she won't really.
The perfect moment.
Yeah, that was the last happy moment of it.
I do want to make it clear, by the way, that most of what I play are songs that second graders play. I have a book called Piano Town that I learn like
basic. Won't you take my two?
Piano Town!
Piano Town! We have a winner.
I'm going to fucking learn Funky Town.
Yes, you are.
I have an app called Music Notes. It's where I get all my sheet music from. I'm going to fucking get Funky Town.
Yes, you are.
It can't be hard to play.
But I do have, I really am impressed because I feel like even just in the year of violin, it was so hard. It was so hard. It's just hard as a grown up. Everything, I have great admiration for, because I'm going to be honest with you. So, we've been, whatever, like 3 years ago, we're like, we're just going to try to say yes to new shit. We're going to try to, whatever it is, like the new restaurant. And I am incredibly averse to that. I'm a tourist. I like things just so, I feel like, so I've been kind of cheating. Like I went back to the violin. I went back to skiing. I hadn't skied for 30 years, but I went back to it.
Yep.
And I've been counting that as new.
Yep.
It's not really new.
But it is in a way. Because you haven't been doing it. I think if you haven't been doing it in the last 5 or 10 years, it's new again.
What about French and Spanish?
Because
I did those too.
Still okay. You know why? Because I feel like you appreciate them on a different level. And I don't think you have to like, well, I got to learn Russian because I learned French and Spanish before. But I still think that it still is a new
experience.
We
may need to learn Russian, all of us.
Actually, now that I think about it.
It's pretty practical.
Wait a minute, guys. We're trying something. Da, da, da. But I think it counts because it's... new to you again, because it's not something that is you would have to study it again to get.
Yes,
it.
But Charlie's gotten really into Boston whalers, because mm-hmm. he was so scared of, like, he didn't know anything about there. We go to this little island in the summer, and they have, again, this is deeply relatable. We have our boat has been a real wake up call.
Oh yes, yes. Oh right.
But again, I admire it because it's something that he never did before. And you know, he was like, I want to learn how to, like, drive a boat. Like, I think it's kind
tie
of
tie a knot.
Yeah, exactly. Like a slip knot and stuff. And I mean, I would. He got himself certified or whatever, like safety. I would go to bed and listen to him on, like, the internet class, going like, starboard, lee. I'm like, good night. I'm out. I'm going to go fiddle alone with a bottle of wine.
Honey, if you want to fool around, I'll be in the aft. You want to do it in the aft? Come on,
I'll be fiddling in the aft.
But you know what? I tell you why that's important is because if we have to continue to grow or we shrivel and die.
We do.
And especially, like, as you get older, you want to make sure you're using your brain. And so if you are engaging in things, even if you did them 30 years ago, it's just good for your mind and it's good for your soul.
It is. But I want to try officially more, because I think we don't try things where I admire the piano more than I admire what I have done, because I feel like those are really the growth areas. Like, honestly, even, you know, I've written a lot of sketches, but this Audible series that I also, so I basically have this album and I was trying to monetize it. And my good friends at Broadway Video were like, hey, we have a deal with Audible. Why don't you pitch a show using your music? You know,
oh, that's great.
Which was a great idea. And so I worked with an old friend from the Groundlings who is now like a legit playwright. Like, she has a play at the Public Theater this year.
Oh, wow.
She's a grown up, proper grown up.
A real live grown up.
But she, like, left comedy behind, which I did on purpose. I reached out to her because I knew she would be more structural than I am, structurally experienced, I should say. And we wrote this 8-part miniseries for Audible, which was incredibly fun. I know you've been in this sphere a long time, but again, just like thinking about story from, you know, from an Audible standpoint is really interesting.
God,
and
great.
Soup to nuts, you know, like pitching something, writing the outline, you know, writing the first draft from the outline, recording, casting it, listening to the voices, editing the voices, which is incredibly hard, actually, to figure out. Like, we have a lot of party scenes, so figuring out, like, waterfalling all these voices and how does the dialogue you want come forward. It's weird without the visuals in this world. And anyway, so it ended up being very educational and really, really, really fulfilling.
But also because when you're young, you kind of do stuff more because you need to. It's like, oh, I need to do this. You know, I got to work. I got to make money. I need to do better. True. I need to. And then getting to a place where you can just do stuff because you like to.
Yeah.
Because it's enjoyable.
Totally.
You know, like, and also you know how to, you know how to seek out complementary partnerships. That's like, these are my strengths.
Yeah.
You have a different set of strengths. Let's make a fun thing. Every different person you work with will create a different chemical bond that will produce a slightly different entity, a different tone of something.
Completely. And you get better at saying, I'm not good at this one thing, and I feel bad about that. You know, I'm okay learning, and I want to learn. Look, I don't think it's a perfect show, obviously. Like, nobody's ever going to say that about their work. But
it'd be funny if you did. I have to say, it's a perfect show.
It's a perfect Audible miniseries.
If you like perfection,
they should quit. They're going to close their show.
You're welcome, Audible.
Yeah. No, I mean, whatever. I don't know what people are like or not. But I will say that I do feel like I told the story I wanted to tell. I really love the cast. I love the voices. I love the intimacy of the Audible thing. Telling a story in an intimate way. I feel like it's so intimate.
And especially now, because people consume so much content. Like, when we were growing up, a person's album, their comedy album, music album, whatever, defined them for the next period of time. And if it was good, it went one direction. And if it wasn't good, that could take them in a different direction and they'd really have to dig out of a hole. But now it's like, you can make stuff, and I think this is good, without having to judge it so much or feel like it has to be perfect because, you know, whatever. If it works, it works. If it's not, you just go make another thing.
Yeah.
You know? And if it doesn't work, then no one will remember that.
Yeah,
you
I
know?
Hope so. Like, I mean, and you learn so much each time. You just learn. Have you written a lot of scripts?
No, I mean, I haven't written really any, like, screenplay stuff. I wrote a sitcom pilot with David X. Cohen last
pilot season. We sold a show and then it didn't get picked up. But that process was really fun. Like writing with different people is fun.
I think so too.
Because everyone has a different skill set and a different like, oh my God, that's how you learn to do that. It's just fun.
It's really fun. And it's for me, again, this is, I've always collaborated, but I'm especially loving it these days because I feel like you could admit to, you know, these Google Docs, you're literally leaving the comments like, I hate this joke, help!
Yeah, but you know, if you're a procrastinator too, it makes you accountable to someone.
That is everything. And you're 100% true. Sorry, I pointed at you.
No, no, that's
fine. I got
fine.
Excited.
I don't mind.
But no, and that's...
Oh, that, you're hurting me.
Because I feel accountable to my colleagues way more than I do to, like, the paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, like, even though I should feel... You know, the self-hate comes in on like, I can't believe I haven't written this. But with a friend, you're like, or colleague.
I'll do it for them.
You're like, shit, like she's waiting for these pages. I got to send something. And knowing that I can say to Mona or to, you know, I'm writing another thing with Rachel Dratch right now, like that I can just say like, I have nothing here. But, or I tried this. Do you like it? Or, oh my God, I thought of something. And to have that constant feedback and affirmation of like, the excitement of going into the Google Doc and having them ha 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 at something that stupid that you wrote.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
That's a great feeling. I love collaborating. I don't know how you do stand up.
Well, I mean, it's sort of a collaboration with the audience.
That's true.
You know, like in a weird sort of way. And I have friends that if I'm stuck on something or if I have ideas and I'll go, I don't know, can I just bounce this off you and see how it lands? And because I'm like you, I like to be in a room. I like to, I'm riffy. I like to get riffy.
Yeah.
And so I don't write.
Get riffy with it.
Get riffy. I don't write from a place of like, now I force myself every morning at breakfast to just like try to write anything, whether it's new bits or going and doctoring up old bits or new song ideas or whatever. But in really, I can't like sit down and write like, here is all of the comedy that I'm going to write as a big, long paragraph. I just like riffing. Oh, okay, I should write that down.
Yep.
But in my head, it just doesn't work.
Do you keep little notebooks? What's your process?
I use a note-taking app.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I use a note-taking app, and then it syncs on all the devices. And
wait a minute, what is it?
Evernote.
Oh, you use Evernote.
Yeah.
I can't figure out Evernote.
It's great.
This will be good for me. This will be my learning area.
It's really simple. I mean, but even now, like, you know, like Apple's Notes app syncs on all of the... But Evernote's really good because you can tag everything and you can create different notebooks. The only thing you can't do that is astonishing to me is that you cannot... You can only organize all of your notes one of two ways, either alphabetically or by date, like that it was modified or created or something, but you can't, like, I can't rearrange them into any order I want them in.
I know.
And that drives me crazy.
Because I want a whiteboard in my head, you know, like I want something in my device.
There are whiteboard apps. There are like mind mapping apps. There are totally apps for that. Absolutely.
Because I want like this, because you're similar, you know, you have nine things going and you want to make sure that like, I don't know. I feel like I've always wanted a big whiteboard in the sky where I can just keep my little lists going, you know, of like, again, with the album, the Audible thing, this movie that I'm pitching with Dratch, this, you know, like, it's like you always have nine, I have concerts coming up.
Up a whiteboard.
I need a whiteboard.
Just get a whiteboard.
I find them aesthetically unpleasing. This is a big problem. How do I do it in a way that anyone wants to look at it?
Well, you could...
Everybody.
Here we go.
Don't go to the bathroom yet.
I don't know why I just turned into Ted Knight from Caddyshack. How about a Fresca? But you know what you could do? So you get your whiteboard, see?
Okay.
Oh my God, this is going to... Oh, fuck. Fucking, this is a fun idea. So, you get your whiteboard.
Is this going to be crafts oriented?
It's crafty as AF, okay? So you get a whiteboard, all right? You get your whiteboard. Frame it.
Hi-o.
Double side, frame it. And then you can like hang it from picture wire and then you can flip it and you put art on the other side.
Oh, that is good.
And then you can hide it in plain sight.
Hey guys.
The way Gus Fring told Walter White to act as a drug dealer. Hide in plain sight.
This is why you get paid the big bucks.
I don't get paid to do that. But then you could have your art on one side, then you flip it and then whiteboard on the other side.
I really like this.
Guys,
sometimes
see this is you. This is the
walkaways here are bluegrass band, whiteboard art,
whiteboard art, whiteboard art,
hashtag whiteboard art.
Yeah, I gotta manufacture that.
We've gotten exactly right. Nerdist Enterprises. No, that's not yours anymore.
It's not mine anymore. No. But
don't do it. That
doesn't matter.
Don't give him. No. Patent it.
You ever?
It's IP.
I don't know how many times I've been out places and I. have thought of what I think is a great idea, and then I park the website, and then I look at the web domains that I own, and I'm like, why did I park DudeMyNipplesAreHuge.com?
Well, I wish you had parked on a gas tire, because I can't get it. Should have thought of me in the 80s, Fred.
Someone who has Anagastire.
Some Greek guy. Some, like, Greek tycoon. We've tried for years.
Is his name Anagastire?
It is not. He just got smart, and early on, he bought it up. And every year I go to GoDaddy, way too much money. I mean, it's my fucking name. There's nobody else named Anagastire. They're two really... It's a weird combination of names. I should have changed it to begin with. It should be, like... Sarah Johnson. I'd be much more famous if people could say my name.
No. Anagastire has good SEO. That's because if someone searches you on Google, you're the only one that comes up.
Right, but she says it wrong.
Oh.
Really wrong.
Shit.
I just posted about it. She says, Anagastire.
Who says this? Oh.
The Google lady.
Yes.
She butchers it.
Anagastire.
Anagastire.
So I have parked names of every SNL cast member. Yeah. Nobody will
Stavros.
Get their names. Stavros. Yeah. Familia.
I mean, I have Anagastire in concert. That's my URL for, like...
What about AnnaFuckingGastire.com?
That's what it should be. Damn it. Did you buy that already?
It's not too late.
Ugh.
You know what? You should just park it anyway.
I'm going to park it. AnnaFuckingGastireAssholes.com.
Assholes! Wouldn't it be funny if the Greek guy saw that one coming too? Nice
no.
try.
Hey, I already have that one. You are a douche. Why is he Russian?
I don't know, because we're just doing...
Stavros is a Russian Greek.
He's just a...
Russian Greek.
He's Russian
to park people's names. He's basically my Ancestry.com quarter.
That's crazy that he won't... So is it like 5,000, 10,000, 15,000? Like, what does he want for
it? It's more than that. I mean, it's enough... I would pay... Honestly, I would pony up $5,000 if I could have my fucking name back. But it's been...
Did you make an offer of $5,000?
It was something in the six figures at some point.
What?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. I haven't looked it up in a long time, but the business and GoDaddy can't get it. And every year he renews it right before it comes up. It's
well,
such an extra prick.
Auto-renew.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
but it's always like within 24 hours.
But it's like you're not a corporation. Like that's
it's really
crazy.
Unfair. No, it's really unfair. And maybe I should go back and revisit it. But it makes me crazy.
Maybe you should take.
Find out his name.
this is maybe another series to pitch, a docu-series about you traveling to Greece to try to get your
try to
name.
To find my tycoon.
To get your URL back.
Yeah, that's.
And even if you don't get it back, it just sort of shames the guy into like, just give her the fucking
that's
URL.
True. It's like a Roger and Me.
Yeah.
Situation.
But of your own personal domain.
I mean, I did do that when I got verified on Twitter. I literally shamed Twitter by staging a campaign and holding up signs. Like,
and then you finally got your
name. Held up a sign that said, this is my Arab Spring. Just all of these different... I got like everyone that I knew that was verified, yeah, as much as possible to try to get it. And it actually started trending, which was really exciting at the time. And then in that great way, my publicist called and like, hey, great news. We called Twitter and got you verified. I was like, and you killed the PR. Thank you so much.
But it worked.
It worked, yeah.
You still got it.
I hope
you're able to get Anagastire.com someday.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe we should start a change.org petition.
Don't you feel there might be bigger fish to fry right now?
There is a change.org petition right now. There is a change.org petition that has been going on for years that is my favorite, which is some guy decided to start a petition. He wanted to change the name of ants to Spicy Boys. And it's a legit, it has thousands.
I admire the drive and focus.
And there's like a little MS Paint ant with flames coming off it as a picture. Change ants to Spicy Boys.
I don't know what to say, except that I hope that it happened before the election.
Katie, how many... Can you just look up Change Ants to Spicy Boys and
let's see what
the count is up to that right now? He's up to 158,000 signatures. Rename Fire Ants to Spicy Boys.
What? And look, these people are doing it now.
Yeah, we're watching
it. Do you think they're also signing other things?
I don't know. Maybe they are. Maybe they will sign the petition to get your name back on Anagastire.com.
I have to leave here in 14 minutes. I just saw the time on that.
All right.
I have an airplane to catch.
What?
I have an
You're
airplane.
Going back already?
I've got to go back. I've got songs to shill.
When, first of all,
I've got to do a Barnes and Noble in store.
Your album is great,
thank
and your
you.
Voice is amazing.
Thank
and before
you.
We go, I just want
no, we don't have to stop
one,
now. We have 14
I want
minutes.
One vocal tip before you leave, because I blow my voice out. I had to start taking voice lessons because I learned how to. I never learned how to sing properly. I just learned how to melodically shout, and so I create all my sound through my throat.
Right.
And she's
breathe.
Trying to teach me to
breathe.
Expand my intercostal muscles and use. She says the breath becomes the song, and I've been trying.
Do you
to
giggle
make
every
the
time she says
the...
diaphragm? That's du rigueur.
Oh, stop! It. Oh, that's so inappropriate. So I do need a vocal tip. But you are a well-oiled comedy machine, and I hope that you just keep making and generating as much stuff that makes you happy as possible. I know we can't talk about it, but the thing that you're doing with Rachel Dratch is so fucking cool, and I'm so excited about
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully that'll happen and we can come back and talk about
really
it.
I really hope that that happens.
I'm basically going to inhabit Christmas, I think, for the rest of my life. I mean,
sure.
Because it's fun. I do, look, Sugar and Booze is... It's there's lots of, like I said, traditional favorites on there. There's secular seasonal favorites, as I like to say. One song for the Jews and one for the Christians.
Fantastic.
And then everything else is just, you know, of the season, because I really did want to make an old-fashioned record that feels a little bit contemporary and that feels, that sounds like marketing speak, but I did want a record you could put on and throw a Christmas party.
But you also covered You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, which is great.
It's an amazing song. It's lyrically fantastic. So I wanted to lean in. I was nervous about it because, again, it's a woman's voice on it, so I just wasn't sure if that was good. But we do it over an octave and a half. I'm actually doing I'm performing with the San Francisco Symphony on December 7th, and we are doing that orchestrally. And
oh my
I am
God, that's
so
good. Where,
excited.
In San Francisco?
In San Francisco. I'm here at Largo. I'll say all my dates. I'm here in LA at Largo on December 3rd. Mm-hmm. I'm at Joe's Pub November 30th. July. I'm going to do Christmas in July. No, importantly, actually, Nashville City Winery, Atlanta City Winery. I'm really looking forward to being there because I haven't really performed in that part of the country. I'm in Chicago. So it's all up on Anagasteyer in concert.com. You could drive a train through the rage hole.
Yeah, I know.
But,
the regular Anagasteyer.com will get you a lot of recipes with feta.
Yeah,
and
yeah, exactly. Anagasteyer and concert.com has all the tour dates. But I'm really looking forward to doing it live because it's been a labor of love. The musicians are fantastic. I'm making them all wear bow ties.
Oh, that's great.
We're getting dressed up. It's a holiday festive affair.
That is fantastic. And
then the audio show is on audible.com. It's a... for members audio, it's an original member bonus, so it's been given to everybody who has an audible.com subscription.
I have one of those
on December 6th.
I can't wait to listen
to
it.
Yeah, and a lot of fun people in that, a lot of fun comedy people. I have Maya Rudolph is the co-starring, and Rachel Dratch, and so my sister's in comedy, and Tim Bagley and Mike Hitchcock.
Oh, Tim's so
They're
funny.
So funny. They're so funny.
Did you ever see his
Oscar Nunez
show about working at the Playboy Mansion?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
he's
so
an unbelievable comic. So they're all on it. And Oscar Nunez. We got a lot of really fun people to participate. And
I am so happy for you. And also, it delights me to no end. Like when I come and perform in New York and you say, can Charlie and I come to
the
show?
We love it.
I just love you guys so much that it delights me to
it's
see
our,
you.
It's our fall tradition.
Oh my gosh.
I know, I love it. You've come a couple years in a row.
Yeah. I mean, Caroline's is a great club.
Do you go for one of the festivals or do you just go?
I've done New York Comedy Festival.
Oh, for Comic Con.
But I came this year during New York Comic Con because
right.
I was there already for,
right.
you know, the Walking Dead stuff. And so...
I know, and I miss my days on a sci-fi show because that really was a great... The only press we did was Comic-Con, and it was so incredibly fun to go do that. Charlie and I are good for any kind of a convention situation.
But I really hope that you... I hope I get to see... I want to see your Largo show.
Yeah,
and,
please
and
come.
And I'm just glad that you're touring.
Yeah. Well,
so,
good. Well, there'll be a Glockenspiel. I literally just ordered one for my player.
I'm going to start sending you Glockenspiel riffs.
You
and,
bet.
And then just
brung,
like...
Brung, brung, brung.
I wonder how many Glockenspiels we could fit into one song. Like,
we've got to do it.
It's like you'll have the high end stuff, the low end stuff, some mid stuff, like harmonies, like, and then it'll just be like we're in inside a snow globe, but instead of drops of snow, it's they're all glockenspiels.
Yeah. Well, we've got glockenspiel. We've got a lot of slides, a lot of trombone slides.
Good.
Natch. Very important. A lot of cowbell.
Yep, of course.
It goes without saying.
Of course.
And it's legit. We're really using it. And a Montana Cuban beat on Secret Santa. So we have some killer trumpet playing, which always fills my soul with... I like horns. I really love horns.
So lastly, just a vocal tip.
Oh, yeah, the tips. Okay, so what do you need to know? You want to know warm-ups? You want to know...
Everything I do is terrible for singing. I talk a lot in podcasts.
Yes.
I do stand-up.
Yes.
You know, I talk a lot in my car on the phone because it's a mobile office. And so I'm trying to learn how to talk just using breath instead of like, I'm tensing up to force air through my throat.
So you definitely want to relax, of course. The biggest tip I have is a medical tip, or like a herby horseshitty, earthy crunchy tip.
Yes.
So when, do you take Arnica? Do you know about Arnica?
I've heard of it. Isn't that for like bruises and stuff?
So when I did Wicked, I would take the pellets, those little Arnica Montana 30cc pellets, those little blue things that people sell. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
They're at Whole Foods or like Erewhon or whatever. And you let them dissolve in your throat.
They're Erewhon. They're like $1,000.
Yeah, it's $1,000 too. you just let these little pellets dissolve in your mouth, in your throat, right before you perform and right after. And it basically just stops swelling and bruising in your throat without it being ibuprofen, which you can burst a vocal cord with, which is really important.
Oh, yeah.
And,
you know, I don't take that for that.
Yeah. And water. I mean, it's boring, but water might be the biggest help for me. The singers all do Arnica, tons of water, and something called Mucinex.
Oh, yeah.
The little phlegm guys?
The little phlegm guys.
By the way, who thought of that? And by the way, why hasn't it been rewritten? Like, I love that they're just like, the phlegm guys are popular.
Well, you feel sorry for them. It's like, oh, no one will give them a break.
I don't feel sorry for them. I feel upset by them.
I want to see a whole holiday special of just
that's a great idea. Write it down.
Remember, come on, California.
Buy the URL.
They're the California Raisins of now. Remember when the California Raisins got their own special and everything?
I want you to look up your bookmarked URL. Yeah. Yeah. But Flem Guy's Christmas special.
I had him snake a camera down my throat. No polyps, but my throat is just always...
But you're very resonant.
Just inflamed. My throat's always inflamed. And I have a deviated septum, and I think I have allergies. But
you
then my vocal coach is like, but you talk and sing wrong all the time, so that's probably inflaming your throat.
What about just like acid reflux?
I got that too. All of it.
Yeah, I have it too. It's part of the... I mean, whatever. I like food. So,
yeah, I do too. Yeah. And it's like, yes, if I ate like a, you know, if I just ate like a rabbit, then my throat would probably be...
And one of those really marriage-ending pillows that... where you're tilted upwards through the night.
Oh, I mean, there's only wife constantly is just like, you need to roll over, you're snoring. No, you're snoring. No, it's me.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to end up with one of those masks, aren't you?
The CPAPs?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, any minute now. But yeah, so I would say the Arnica, the water, and then the Mucinex really does help anything allergy. It's really a miracle thing.
Can you take it every day?
Every day. And actually, lots of singers take one every day.
Not Mucinex DM, just Mucinex?
Not DM. That'll speed you out, and then you'll be like a meth head.
Yeah, because I was taking Claritin a lot.
Yeah.
And that makes me real jittery.
Shaky. Although I take the generic, and it doesn't make me jittery.
Really?
I don't know why.
The generic pseudoephedrine?
Loratadine.
The loratadine. Oh, yeah, because the Claritin the D is the pseudoephedrine,
I think. The D is the stuff they make meth with.
That's why you have to sign for it, because you're...
Right, that's why it's behind lock and key.
Going behind the lock and key, yeah.
So, good for meth, bad for your voice.
Bad for the voice, it turns out.
It turns out. Which is the break.
You want to be a meth singer, good for you.
Good for you, go for it. So, you don't want the DM, but you take one of those a day. I'm sure, once again, the people are loving this conversation.
You know what, though? Honestly, I've talked to so many people who have the same problem, and obviously, the air quality in Los Angeles is fucking garbage, so that's
why
not
I take
helpful.
A Claritin the minute I land here.
But just the regular Claritin, with not the D.
I take the generic, loratadine.
Just loratadine, okay.
Yeah, I take it as soon as I get to LA, and I take one Mucinex a day when I'm working. It just thins, it's gross, but it thins out everything. So you're not, as I understood it, because I really had to be scoped a bunch of times when you do Wicked, it's no fucking joke. It's like the Olympics of vocal work.
Yeah.
And you are, it's 8 times a week,
Jesus.
And there's a ton of artificial smog and smoke and fog.
Right.
In that show. So I'm a little sensitive to it. So my throat was always trashed between the singing and that fog. So I just did everything I could possibly do. And so I took that arnica and that mucinex. And as I understand the mucinex, so you don't get those ugly green character guys.
Yeah.
They stick on your throat. They can cause laryngitis and cause damage. And
oh my God, I can't wait to start taking this stuff. This is going to be great.
Mm-hmm. You're going to feel like $1 million.
This is great
news. I look forward to feedback.
I really, really, really appreciate it. The arnica is just, it just says arnica. It's just arnica tabs.
Arnica. Yeah, they're little pellets. Ask them for the little pellets. They're in a blue tube.
When you say pellets, it makes me feel like my wife has to shoot it into the back of my throat with a straw like a horse.
Microscopic. They're tiny and they dissolve in your mouth.
Okay.
She probably takes the homeopathic stuff. She's California.
Yeah. She's from Connecticut.
Oh.
But she's a transplant.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everyone in California does arnica.
They're proud of you. Yeah, probably. Everyone does arnica.
You know, it's like the thing.
All right.
So good luck with it.
But, listen.
And tea? Do you drink tea? You're not a caffeine guy.
I drink a little caffeine in the morning, but I should drink more tea.
Black tea.
Black tea.
So the old ENT thing, if you're really screwed, this is a good one. Come on around to Anna's Vocal Corner.
No, this is, I'm not kidding. So many friends of mine have this problem.
Okay, so the old ENT trick was you take a pot of the pasta.
Yes, and the pasta, and then you eat the pasta.
You take a big pasta pot.
Yep.
You boil 20 black Lipton tea bags in it.
Okay.
You take the towel.
The towel goes over your head.
You put your face over it.
Okay.
It's hot as fuck.
Yes.
And you set the timer for 20 minutes.
Oh my God. So you black tea steam your sinuses.
You black tea steam your sinuses. You might blow some amazing shit out.
Yep.
You huff it.
Yep.
Back to the myth.
Yep.
You huff. A lot of Walter White in here. You huff it and it is a miracle worker.
Do you do any of the neti pot stuff? Do you flush
Not
out?
Not anymore. Honestly, another marriage ender. I mean, there's a point at which my husband was like, I love you, but I can't with... Because every time I'm really working vocally, I go to really neurotic.
Right.
It's very hard not to. So I did it and did not. But eventually I feel like maybe it kind of just wasn't working. I don't know.
All right. Okay.
To be continued.
So I'm going to try all these. I hope to see you again soon.
Seems.
And please tell Charlie I said hello.
I will. He was actually in town last night. We had bizarre crossing of the ships moment where he was flying in for a meeting and I was whatever.
And you don't have to say this if you don't want to, but did your daughter do on the SATs?
Did we do it?
Didn't she take them the day? She take them the day you came to the show?
She took them the day she went.
She took them, right?
She took them.
Very clear.
Honestly, I spent about as much as those gals did on tutors. So like at this point, I wish I just bought the school.
I mean, come on, you guys.
She applied early to the college of her choice.
Great.
She did. I'm going to have a little tiny brag. She's a young arts finalist in playwriting. That's like the national merit of creative stuff.
That's amazing.
So that was exciting and a good little waiting time win.
That's cool.
So she's if she does well, they go to Miami for a week with all the other artists and writers, and then I guess it's like a presidential scholarship contention thing. And then you get to meet Betsy DeVos.
Yep. Guys.
So there's a win.
Well, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you. Please tell everyone I said hi.
The feeling is mutual.
Come back anytime.
We will.
Or I'll come hang out with you in
New
York.
You just come hang out. It's perfect.
And we'll go to fiddle camp.
I love it. All right. I'm going to pee and go to the airport.
The end.
The end. Him.
Anna's lift is 2 minutes away, but after we turned off the mic, she told me that she narrated a thing called, what was it for PBS?
Well, I've done two nature specials. So I did a squirrel documentary. It aired last Thanksgiving.
God, that's great.
It was one of the greatest moments. First of all, so relaxing and so soothing to hear your own voice. Just very quiet. It's like 3 hours of going
and squirrel adjacent.
And just to keep saying things like, he hid the nuts. And then to take it very seriously and say... But will they find them again in winter? It was so soothing. The whole
family
situation.
Family Sayura Day, the squirrel.
So we did the squirrel documentary a year ago, and then I'm so psyched, because, you know, you do your first one, and then you're like, am I going to nail it? And I just booked The Mighty Weasel.
Oh, God, that's great.
And I recorded it, and there's honey badgers, there's flying weasels, it's pretty amazing.
If we form a bluegrass band, maybe it should be called The Mighty Weasel. Yeah.
And, of course, the opening, all of the opening is about how we've given them a really bad name, and it's not fair because they're incredibly smart.
You see what's over there, don't you?
A mighty weasel.
It's a wolverine.
Oh, yep. They were in my documentary.
It's a vintage wolverine.
We had a wolverine. We had a honey badger, who are awesome.
Yep.
Ferrets.
Mm-hmm.
who can fold in half.
Yep.
And then just garden. They're called tiny weasels or teeny weasels or something like that.
And the ferrets also are great on the shoulders of weird dudes who hang out at malls.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of preppers, a lot of doomsday preppers. they're bred there.
So when does the Mighty Weasel come out?
I'll let you know. Let you know. And I'll be the first to share it. If you look in my Instagram feed, you'll see the stuff about the squirrel one. The squirrel one was fantastic.
I can't wait until you release the Mighty Weasel.
We had a dual viewing party because it was a Saturday of Thanksgiving last year where my friend's movie, Christmas on Honeysuckle Lane, which was the Hallmark movie, and the squirrel documentary aired the same night. So there was a drinking game that started with nuts and moved on to the names Holly and Barry.
And Halle Berry was in it.
Holly, Mary, Barry.
Barry.
Because all the holiday movies have those names. Like, literally.
Oh, they have to.
Yeah, so.
All right, well, I look forward to more of your nature documentary narrating.
Thank you. Somewhere it fits into the... Maybe I'll get my Hollywood star.
The Mighty Weasel.
Mighty Weasel.
Cousin of the Wolverine.
It's very soothing.
That was the ID10T podcast number 1033 with Anna Gasteyer. And, first of all, I adore her. She's such an incredible human being, and her husband, Charlie, too. They are such rad people. And a lot of what we talked about was about exploring creativity and doing things simply because they sound fun to you. And what sort of concerns me in this world of the economy of likes and reshares that we live in on all the platforms is that I feel like people put popularity and validation before their own creativity and sort of chasing that validation, chasing those likes. But I feel like the people who are the most successful and the happiest are the ones who chase their own creativity and chase their passions and the things they're passionate about. Like that person across the street who's using a chainsaw on a tree. Listen to that. That is chainsaw passion. That is tree pruning passion over there. But think about the things in your own life that you've always wanted to try or the things that sound fun to you. I mean, you feel pulled in a direction when you get excited about something and something seems interesting to you. And then you might go, oh, I don't have the time or energy to figure that thing out. I don't even know. I mean, there's so many people who are better at it than me, and then you got to stop yourself right there because that's result-oriented thinking. You're not doing it to be better than anyone else. You're not doing it. Don't think about these things as doing them by reaching out as far as you can into the external world. Flip it. Think about reaching as far as you can into your internal world and what makes you happy and exploring the best parts of you that you can be. And instead of trying to be better than anyone else in the world, try to be better than you were yesterday. Be in competition with yourself. Do you understand? Like, instead of trying to worry about, I don't know, you know, see some people on YouTube and Instagram and they're just better at this thing. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You're not doing it for that reason. And the sooner you explore for you, then maybe the side effect is that all that stuff will come, the validation stuff. By that point, you won't care, nor should you, because that's not why you do it. And when you start down that path, then you're going to constantly be in service of trying to do things for likes. And then even if you do explore a passion, then you might start compromising on it because you're like, oh, I don't know. But then people like this or people like that. I don't know. This is just about you feeling whole and being who you are and finding the things that are satisfying to you creatively. And if you say, well, I don't even know what that is. I don't have any likes or passions. I don't know. Well, just start digging around, you know? Jump onto some random subreddits, you know? Is it something crafty? Is it something with your hands? Is it painting, sculpting, knitting? Is it drawing? Is it some type of ideation? Is it coming up with math formulas? Is it statistics? Is it solving a problem? Is there some sort of a social cause, you know? Something that isn't even about about you, but about you finding your creativity and helping other people, you know, simply because you just want to make the world a better place, or you want to see, you know, people benefit in a positive way from things that you create or things that you do. And again, not to get attention, but just because you're contributing and you're being a part of, you're using your creativity for good. So that's it. Just, you know, write some stuff down. Write down things that are interesting to you. And then you break it down into little steps. If I were going to pursue this, what I need to do? Is it something I need to get lessons for? For me, it's piano lessons. And I got to tell you, in this marvelous digital age that we live in, most of the lessons that, I mean, I do have a piano teacher and I do have a guitar teacher. However, a lot of the stuff that I find and learn, I'm just, you know, looking up on YouTube or following certain Instagram feeds. So there is no shortage of instruction online if finances are an issue that you can start to learn stuff. And then you just put one foot in front of the other each day. You work on it a little bit at a time. And then at a certain point, maybe you put it out into the world. Again, not so much for validation, but just more as a milestones for your progress and kind of sharing it with the world. There's nothing wrong with sharing your stuff with the world. It's just, I'm just saying it's not maybe necessarily as healthy to do it because you want the validation. You might get the validation or you might not. But either way, that shouldn't matter, you know? And I know it's hard. I know you want, I mean, listen, I'm a comedian, so I get it. You know, like most of what that part of my career is based on is literally validation from a live audience. However, you should still just make sure that you're putting your own loves and beliefs and passions above chasing that validation, you know, still being able to do things that are meaningful to you. So that's it. I, you know, again, I get rambly in these things, but I was just so inspired by my talk with Anna about, you know, how she just decided to make this album because it was fun. And then she got into the process and realized it was some of the most fun and best work she felt she had ever done. And it was something she just did for herself. And I really hope she goes to Fiddle Camp at some point. Go to Fiddle Camp. Go learn a weird thing. Go learn a weird skill. Why not? Why not? There's no reason not to. You never know what direction it could take you, and you never know what people you could meet, what community you could be a part of. So that is all for today. I hope you find some time, carve out a little bit of time each day to explore your own creativity and fulfill yourself in that way. So I appreciate you listening. I really do. And I hope you have a wonderful week, and I will see you in your ears real soon. All right, bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first. Because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8-plus acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.